Hello and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Thanks for being with us on the show today. My guest is Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski. We'd love to have your questions for him during our next half an hour. Call those in to 765-496-1999. Send an email to ask@wbaa.org and tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Good afternoon. Good to see you.
Afternoon, Stan. Good to be here.
So let's start with something that you say that you've been hearing a lot about recently, the theater purchase, the Lafayette Theater purchase by the city. What led you to do that, to decide that that was something the city should invest in?
Well, you know, as we continue to look at community development and economic development, one of the things that we hear is, you know, the opportunity for different types of entertainment in the community and different types of cultural experiences. And we got a lot of great things going on in the community and a lot of good people doing things. But when we looked at the Lafayette Theater, we weren't sure that it was really meeting its full potential and what it could be as we look at the overall scope of what's currently happening in the community and then what we could do with the Long Center, Lafayette Theater, and then Loeb Stadium. And as I've talked about, you know, Loeb Stadium is being wired so we can have different types of events there that semis can actually back down onto the field and unload equipment for different types of activities and musical opportunities. And so we really looked at, is there a way that we could find economies of scale and coordinate and help local musicians, local talent have an opportunity to do things that maybe they wouldn't do it and do ways things in a way that are affordable for the community and have different things from family options to keeping millennials and retaining talent to our seniors and activate that space all the time. So, you and I were talking just briefly. So when you walk by, there's activity there during the day, during the evening, on weekends, get back to where we're having wedding receptions there and different things like that and really activate that space in a way that it hasn't been for a while.
And yeah, then, I can't be the only one who feels like it's been underused.
Yes, no, you're not. From the response I'm getting, you're not. And then the other piece of that is it's an important corner. So to ensure that it's maintained historically correct, make sure that it's maintained over the years, like, you know, the city's owned the Long Center since in the 80s, and we recently did a $2 million upgrade there and renovations and, you know, a lot of the stuff you can't see, like the boilers and the electric and the air conditioning that nobody wants to donate money for because you can't see it, right? And I understand that's difficult. So we want to make sure that we keep those two prominent structures in good physical condition. All in the city is probably in the best place to do that and then work with the community to find out how we manage and run Lafayette Theater and how we bring shows and, like I said, then showcase local talent. And I think it's got a lot of unused potential right now that we can make it really cool. And at the end of the day, we're hoping that we do it in a way that people say, wow, you know, look what's taking place in Lafayette, Indiana, can help keep retain talent for the next GE or the next economic development opportunity that we have.
On to something that was in the news just before we began the show today. Birch Bayh, former senator from Indiana, has passed away at the age of 91. He's one of the more prominent Democrats ever to come out of the state, maybe among the most accomplished. Passed a bunch of legislation, got two amendments to the Constitution passed. Is he someone you got to know at all in your career?
Well, I've got to know his son, Evan, quite well while he was governor and secretary of state and then later a senator, and met with him many times. And he actually assisted me in my very first mayoral campaign here, came and made some appearances. His father, obviously, is a little bit older, and actually older than even my father. But certainly his legacy will be well remembered. Those things that you mentioned with Title IX and the equality that it brought, having two amendments passed, that's extremely rare. He may be the only handful of people that's been able to do that, or the only person.
I read today he is the only non-founding father for whom that is true.
Yeah, so that's incredibly rare. And he was a nice man, genuine. He was able to work across the aisles. My only, you know, I've met him before, but my one kind of special memory, and I'd have to try to find the picture. I've seen it. My mom's deceased, so it's a little bit harder to find stuff. But when he was running in the 60s and he came to Lafayette, my parents went down there. I was born, still small, and they have a picture in a box my dad handed me to Birch Bayh, and he held me while my dad took a picture. So, like I said, we got to find it, and probably a good time to do that. But certainly, he did a lot for this country. He did a lot for this community. He really a genuine person, cared about what he was doing, cared about people, and cared about equality.
This is a guy who was fairly progressive, and sometimes going against what might have been the will of the state at the time, and he really sought some big changes, got a couple of them passed, had a couple like the Equal Rights Amendment that never quite got to where they needed to be. Now, I want to ask you, as a current model of Democrat who holds office in the state, do you think that that sort of Birch Bayh 60s and 70s progressivism is not the way that Indiana Democrats are anymore? You've described yourself here and plenty of other places as a more conservative type of Democrat. Obviously, that's popular. Nobody has filed to run against you this mm-hmm. election cycle. And so you're about to be your fifth term in office. So that clearly works with at least your constituency. What do you think about that idea of the changing mold? Because we talked a lot of times, too, about Evan Bayh Democrats. That was the state model for a little while before it became clear that that probably can't win anymore in Indiana. What's your thought on it?
Well, I mean, you know, I think things evolve over time, and I think the more they change, the more they stay the same sometimes also. And so as you look at that, I mean, I think when you talk about progressive or when you talk about equality, things that are equality, I think there's still a lot of similarities on the way that we approach equality and the way that we look forward to the future. And I think the fact that it's changed in how people work across the aisle, what you can get done, what you have to do to get anything past and make even maybe a portion of what you're trying to work on a reality has gotten to a very, very challenging and difficult place. But I think, you know, what I really admire about Senator Bayh was, like you said, his vision for the future, but his real love of people and that equality aspect of people and how that affected everybody's day-to-day lives. And I think a lot of those things are still alive and well in many of us and here and even in our community, even in both parties, as we've always talked about. This is a little bit different area than a lot of places, but I think that's still alive and well here, how we look to the future. You know, just recently, Mayor Dennison, myself, and Commissioner Tom Murtaugh, so a Democrat and two Republicans, were down on the Senate floor supporting, you know, the hate crimes bill, and really wanted to see that get passed in the form that Senator Alting had brought to the floor. And so I think, you know, here locally, you see some of that. It's hard to say that's forward thinking since we're only a handful of states that don't have one. So that's probably not the proper term. But people here
playing catch up.
Both sides believe it's important to the point we were willing to go down and stand on the Senate floor and express our views. And so, but Senator Bayh certainly embodied what you would like to see. And I think somebody of any political party, he cared about the people he was representing, and he did have that vision and that courage to look forward to the future, even if sometimes that was not easy to do and maybe rub people the wrong way.
One more question about his legacy, if you will. You've got a Hoosier running for president in Pete Buttigieg, who is probably about as close in terms of progressivism to Birch Bayh as anybody we've seen run from Indiana in a good long while. Do you think there is any way that his run for president is sort of a benchmark as to where that kind of thinking is among the voters in Indiana?
Well, I think, I'm not sure I'm going to answer your question exactly, but because I'm not sure. But what I do think is, in general, that the large Democratic primary that we're going to see now throughout the country, and with Beto O'Rourke recently entering the race, I think you're going to see a confluence of those ideas and see where the party really is at and where the party is moving in the future, and what level of progressivism, what level of different ideals, you know, where we stand on immigration and the environment and criminal justice reform and those types of issues. I think it's probably going to become a clearer where the majority is and where the majority of the country may be. And I think, you know, that's probably a healthy thing. The Republican Party went through that the last time with a very large primary, and we're going to go through it this time. But I think it's going to vet out a lot of good ideas where people really stand on position. And, you know, coming to some agreement between the parties of, you know, what do we do to really move the country forward and really solve immigration? Immigration, for numerous reasons, for the humanitarian piece of it, but for the economic piece of it, it has to be solved and solved in the right way. And there are other issues out there with the environment and climate change and those things that we have got to get to a point where we're making real progress on that for the good of the whole country.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. We're talking today with Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski. We'd love to have your questions. Call those in at 496-1999. Send an email to ask@wbaa.org if you want to do it electronically. We talked with you a couple months ago about the pilot program you were starting with scooter companies in town. As we talk, this is the warmest day so far in 2019. I think a lot of us have been kind of waiting in this scooter discussion for consistent warm weather to see how your program and the city of West Lafayette's program, which are a little bit different, would be adopted and would be perhaps responded to by the scooter companies. What's the latest in your discussion?
Yeah, I mean, it's not really a whole lot different than the last time we talked. We really haven't heard much back from them at all. You know, we had went back and forth with them, as I spoke about, with this pilot program that we wanted to do and kind of what the parameters were. And it seemed to be received okay, and it was a good dialogue. And, of course, we had the weather issue. And but at this point, to be honest with you, we've not heard back from them. They've not...
You've got no proposals on the table.
They've not come back to the table yet, so we'll have to wait and see. And I'll certainly check with Margie when I get back to see if there's any update that I'm not, you know, aware of right now. But the last time her and I talked, we were still kind of waiting and seeing what they, if they're going to, you know, officially sign on the dotted line and do that. And my guess is now that Purdue and West Lafayette has kind of made their decisions, obviously that's the bigger market in this area, on how that's going to go, that may kind of be the catalyst for them to take a look back at Lafayette and see what they want to do here.
Although, as we were talking with Mayor Dennis about on this program last week, that program that West Lafayette has outlined is likely to cost scooter companies a six-figure sum of money every single year for the privilege of working in West Lafayette. And as you pointed out correctly, I think they have a market that seemed to just gravitate toward this in the fall of last year. You don't have as many of those 18 to 24 or 16 to 24-year-old citizens that hang out in Lafayette or that live in Lafayette, as obviously we do here on campus. But on the other hand, Mayor Dennis seemed to deny what seems like an economic reality, which is all of a sudden going from charging scooter companies next to nothing to charging them potentially $500,000 a year. I mean, that's an economic deterrent. You have to think long and hard about whether you want to do that. How does that affect your city, especially as you draw up what you want for economics to come back and the amount of money you want to make off of it, especially now that their ordinance is in place?
Well, you know, we do have a financial piece of our ordinance too that we're looking at a test pilot. It's about $70,000 a year, to the best of my memory, on what that would be with the parameters that we put. Because, as you know, we did put parameters on how many scooters could be in the community, how many could be downtown, how many could be on Main Street within a block, because we just don't want them everywhere. And then that money would be used to do upgrades and bicycle friendly and other pedestrian things that we would use, and enforcement if needed. So, you know, we're looking at it from a standpoint of, they seem to be something that people enjoyed. Now, I can honestly tell you, since they've been gone and not come back, I'm not sure one person has come up and said to me, hey, you got to get working on getting these things back. There hasn't been that level of, I don't know if I want to use the word enthusiasm, but you know, it's not, I don't know if it's raised to that level of priority with most people yet. So, but
not only that, but there was an obvious generational divide.
Right.
I haven't talked to anybody over the age of 30 who says, yay, scooters. In fact, it's been kind of the opposite.
Yeah. So we did have some people ride them that was probably older than 30, but it's probably minimal. And then is it something that's that important? So, but we are looking, we do hope that the scooter folks come back to us and that we can work within this agreement that we've had and that it works out and that it's safe and it is amenity if people want it or a significant number of the population wants it, that we can make it work out. But it is something that we're doing. There are going to be rules and parameters, and is going to be a financial piece to that, and I think that's the reality of what we owe our citizens.
Wanted to talk to you also about something that's being discussed by county leaders, which is a proposal that would ban industrial wind farms from being constructed in Tippecanoe County. What's your position on that generally?
Well, I mean, on alternative energy, whether it's solar, wind, bio generation. I mean, I support alternative energy in general. You know, I have not. The city has not been, you know, directly involved with these discussions because those properties and those property owners will be outside the city limits. So, you know, that's a very obviously a difficult situation as you look at the need for alternative energy, but you balance that with property rights and balance that counties that have have a lot of urbanized centers. How does that all, you know, work and play together? We have those down at City Bus. We have some wind turbines down there that work just fine and have not caused any problems. I think most people are used to seeing them. And again, it's another alternative energy source. So, you know, I think those will probably be evolving discussions and trying to find where there are opportunities. And I guess I would have to ask if you are aware, when they say commercial, has that been designated as not over a certain size or a certain number? Or I guess I'm not familiar exactly what that language
says. Right. I think what we're talking about here is they keep saying industrial wind farms. So you mentioned a really good example, which are the ones that are down at City Bus. There's obviously three of them there that are just designed to power City Bus mm-hmm. in its operation. So not designed to give power back to the grid so much as designed to do that one thing. There, I think, talking about the very tall ones, much like what you see along I-65 over a large area designed to generate a bunch of power for a bunch of homes. And of course, you need probably quite a few property owners to give it the size that would be needed to be able to generate enough mm-hmm. power that it would be worth the wind farms company's time. I wanted to put something to you that Commissioner Murtaugh said to us, and we're going to have a whole feature story on this tomorrow about how the conversation has been different here versus Montgomery County versus Benton County. Commissioner Murtaugh told our reporter Taylor Haggerty he thinks it's going to slow growth in the county if these things are put in. His point is that it's not going to allow for any sort of other economic growth because you're going to have to work around them or they're going to have to be set back from property lines or buildings. And that's a reasonable point. But I wonder if the opposite couldn't also be true, which is that if you're not going to allow this sort of renewable energy development going forward, and we have plenty of statistics to prove that it's one of the fastest growing industries in the country. You've got a whole school up in Benton County that'll train people to be a part of this industry, which just can't find enough workers. Is it possible, especially as we get more and more people to realize the realities of climate change, that not having wind farms around might have the opposite impact that Commissioner Murtaugh suggests?
Well, I mean, it's hard to look, you know, that far into the future, but certainly renewable energy, I think, will continue to play a role. It's had its ups and downs, right? But I think it will continue to grow and play a role. I mean, I certainly understand the thoughts and the concerns about because of the way that Tippecanoe County is growing, and we're blessed with new industry. In fact, you know, we're talking to a couple groups right now that are looking at some parcels that would be very beneficial for us if some of the developments take place that they're discussing. And so I understand the need to find that.
But those are
balance.
Probably close to the cities of Lafayette or West Lafayette,
right? They're close, but they're in the county. I mean, well, one of them is in the county, and it is farm ground. So, I mean, I understand that consideration as they're working through that. And of course, like I said, there's property rights that I'm sure some people want them. Some people would be very willing to sell parcels to have that on their ground and the financial piece that goes with that. And then there's probably folks that don't want to sell them at all. So my guess is that that's a conversation that no matter what happens right now, we'll continue to evolve, because my guess is as the technology gets better and begins to change, probably maybe the height, maybe the size, maybe the way it's generated, maybe it's taken to the grid will somewhat change too and make it easier to do some of those things. So my guess is that conversation will continue to evolve over many into the next several decades.
Got a few minutes left today with Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski here on Ask the Mayor on WBAA. Call in questions at 496-1999 or send an email to ask@wbaa.org. We mentioned City Bus just a moment ago. They have actually been forced to allow the posting of an advertisement on one of their buses from the conservative activist group Indiana Right to Life. It shows three phases of human development, from kind of embryo to small child. It's an anti-abortion ad. That's what the group does. That's what they stand for. It is not, though, gruesome like some of the ads that you sometimes see from other groups around the country. Do you think that the court that mandated the posting of this ad found in the correct fashion in this case? City Bus had originally said, we don't want to do this, and there are a number of reasons for that. What do you make of the decision?
Well, I mean, I have not read the entire court decision. I mean, I skimmed the article that was online on the in the news, and I have not read at all in depth. But I mean, this is a battle that we have seen play out in different types of things, you know, around the country, whether it's been with nativity scenes or Ten Commandments on certain places, whether it's allowing the KKK to come to the courthouse. And I have vivid experience of that because I was a policeman when that happened, was in charge of part of the operations. And so, you know, it continues to be situations that play out throughout the country regarding free speech, political ads. And I think, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that that decision basically said, if you're going to allow political ads and other ads like this that promote potentially an ideology, that you have to do that for all. And so I don't know, if that's the case. City Bus may very well, and maybe they've already decided. Like I said, I've just kind of
decided to change some of their rules.
Right,
I think probably
won't be any of our ads on the back of the buses or anything going forward to kind of try to comply and not get them in a difficult situation. So I think you'll continue to see those battles throughout the country. People have very strong opinions about different issues and going to fight for what they believe in. But I guess that's free speech, and I guess that's part of what makes this country great.
One more topic, a couple of questions in our last few minutes here. A number of people have commented in the last 18 months to 2 years about the state of the Tippecanoe Mall, how it plays into the larger discussion of malls generally in America, which have not had the easiest time the last couple of years. And you've got a couple other surrounding shops, big box stores. There's a Toys R Us, an H.H. Gregg. There was a Sears that's part of the mall that closed. These big retailers have had trouble, and it could affect these larger spaces within cities like yours. And so a couple of people have asked me to ask you, what, if anything, can the city do when you've got a few of these large spaces that are simultaneously empty? We saw what happened with the former Kmart on State Road 38, which is now the At Home store, which has filled in that space admirably. Do you have the ability to go out to people and say, hey, Company X or Company Y, we have this space? Or do you have to, as some mayors have said to me, just kind of wait for somebody to approach you?
Well, I mean, I think there's a couple answers to your question. One, with the changing in online shopping and the online industry that, has taken everything by storm, there has been a significant, I think, permanent change in the way that people shop and acquire products. And I think it'll change even more with the way things are delivered and the different apps and options and things that will be done. And so I think that ship has sailed, right? So big box retail that is not competing, also online, doing some very creative things, will continue to find themselves in what would be a challenging environment. So I think I think local governments can do is, because we don't have the money to somehow subsidize retail or giant box stores, and that's not a good use of taxpayers' money anyway. I think what we have to do our best at is continue to work to create jobs, to create a good economic environment, quality of life initiatives that allow your communities to grow, your population to expand, and so that customer base that has a need for different types of products, goods, and services continues to grow. And then the private sector will have to decide what that looks like. How big a store is that, if there is a, you know, a storefront as opposed to their online? And then the capital markets will just kind of have to decide that. So you can't just sit back on your hands. You got to be out trying to do those basic things to get people to move here, create more jobs, put more money in people's pockets. And then kind of the way they spend those dollars and how they spend those dollars will decide. There's nothing a government can do to shore up a storefront that's going to change your mind or your wife's mind about whether you shop online and buy certain products online or go buy certain products at a storefront. So that'd be a dangerous, I think, hole for government to be putting their money in. And we just got to keep growing, creating jobs. So retail and different places, and we've had some expansion with the Marshalls and Ultra out there, and then things have closed, just like you said. And that's kind of the ebb and flow of market and personal choice right now. We're just here focusing on growth.
And there's another issue that's been talked about at the State House this session, which is the idea of what's now being referred to as the dark box store, the idea that you have an existing tenant in some places and they are using the weight of their lawyers in some cases to go to counties and appeal their property taxes. Then that obviously lowers revenue that comes back to the county, which then lowers revenue that comes back to cities like yours. Have you seen any of that as this shift, which I think you correctly identified as changing to somewhat more online? Have you seen any of that?
Yeah, I mean, we've fought pretty hard 2 or 3 years ago on some of those issues and people that were appealing some of those and the way the laws were being looked at, because it can have a profound effect. Fortunately for us in this region, as you said, a lot of our big boxes have filled up or they've been divided and they have businesses in them. And so we're in a much better position than maybe some other communities have, but it is definitely something that you have to watch because, we're pretty diverse here with the type of tax revenue and assessed valuation base that we have that fortunately is over $1 billion. And so it doesn't impact us quite as much, but did we go down and fight 2 or 3 years ago against some legislation? Absolutely. Do we watch it closely? Absolutely.
Does it change at all your mindset on whether you would offer incentives to people who want to come in and fill the spaces you have empty now?
I mean, that's just probably not. I mean, that's so risky. Retail is so risky and it can change so quickly. Think of some of the stalwarts that you and I grew up with. I mean, with Sears and different things. I mean, that is a risky proposition that we have almost no control over.
All right, Mr. Mayor, thanks as always for your time. We'll do it again next month.
Thanks, Dan.
This has been Ask the Mayor on WBAA. Remember to join us next week for our conversation with Frankfort Mayor Chris McBarnes. You can send questions in advance of that program, if you like, to our email address, ask@wbaa.org. And you can find all of these shows archived on the Ask the Mayor page at wbaa.org. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.